Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic health share ministry to provide an affordable health sharing program rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthshare.com. CMF Curo. Healthcare fully alive.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And today with us, we have Kendra Tierney. She is a wife and a mother of nine children from newborn to teenager. She's a homeschooler and a regular schooler and an enthusiastic amateur experimenter in the domestic arts. She writes the award-winning Catholic Mommy blog, Catholic All Year, is a regular contributor to Blessed Is She Ministries, and is the voice of liturgical living at Endow Ministries. Today, we are discussing her latest book, The Catholic All Year Compendium, Liturgical Living for Real Life. Welcome to the show, Kendra.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. So, Kendra, to start our discussion today, why is it important for us to bring the rhythms of the church into our daily lives?
You know, I think that it really helps me to keep my focus on sort of different aspects of our faith in different parts of the world, not the world, the year. It's kind of like the season where it allows us to think about penance during the season of Lent and preparation during the season of Advent, and then there's seasons of celebration. So there's that sort of rhythm. And it also has helped me so much to really get to know the saints and the events in the history of the lives of Jesus and the Holy Family, things that happened in the early church. So it's just a sort of a celebration-focused way to really educate yourself.
So what will people find in your book, The Catholic All Year Compendium?
So the book is sort of the history and the backstory and traditions behind a lot of different feast days during the year. So just sort of celebrations for suggestions for how to observe them in your home with your family. Also ideas for just sort of ways to keep the faith, you know, interesting and sort of alive in your home.
So what I'd like to do is take a look to start our conversation today at the season of Advent. And as we talk, Advent's right around the corner. Why is it important that we keep Advent and not rush to Christmas?
Yeah, isn't it? It's strange, isn't it? How sort of our secular culture that loves Christmas, and why wouldn't you? But I think that the Christmas radio station is a really good example of just how backwards it's become. That in Los Angeles, where I live, there are two radio stations that are all Christmas music from well before Thanksgiving, and then it ends on Christmas Day. So if people who are trying to observe Advent as a season of waiting and preparation for Christmas, which is what the liturgical year calls for, you know, it's completely backwards. We should be starting all of the Christmas carols on Christmas and continuing all the way through Epiphany or the baptism of the Lord. That's you know, that's the season. So it's a strange thing where we can see that the culture wants to celebrate and wants to observe, but we've just flipped it, where we celebrate, where the secular culture celebrates Christmas really hard until Christmas and then quits. Mm-hmm. Whereas the traditional way and the Catholic way to do it is to use Advent as a time of preparing our hearts, preparing our homes. So that doesn't mean that we don't decorate at all. It means that we in our house use Advent as a time of preparing the home, adding decorations slowly throughout the season. And we, you know, prepare our gifts for people, and we add in extra prayers and really think about, are we going to be ready when Christmas comes to really celebrate then, and to celebrate throughout the season of Christmas, throughout Christmas time, and, you know, all the way through Epiphany, which is traditionally January 6th, but it's usually moved to a Sunday now, or through the baptism of the Lord.
So I wanted to take a little look at some of the suggestions you give people to bring the season of Advent into their homes as more of a religious observation rather than what the secular world has turned it into. One of those objects you discuss are Advent calendars. How are they advantageous to us?
Yeah, I think especially if you have kids in the home and you are practicing Advent as a season of waiting, if your kids are waiting, the first thing they're going to want to know is how long they have to wait, right? And they're probably going to want to know that multiple times a day. So it's really great to have some sort of an Advent calendar that you can point to and say, look, visually, this is how many days are left. So for us, we've had a good luck with a couple of different kinds of Advent calendars and bad luck with one kind. So the one that didn't work for us is I think a German traditional calendar, which is where you open up a little door each day and you get a little piece of chocolate. Because I feel like the idea behind Advent, the feeling behind Advent, is building to something and waiting. And so I tell my kids, oh, we're going to wait for Christmas candy, we're going to wait for treats, we're going to prepare. And when we had this chocolate Advent calendar, all they were doing was eating a piece of chocolate every morning and, you know, begging for chocolate every morning. And it was just a piece of trash at the end of Advent when Christmas came. So what we've done instead is and really enjoyed are Advent calendars that build to something or that actually build something. So we've got one that is sort of our family Advent calendar, and it's a quilted stuffed Christmas tree, and we hang a little ornament. It has 24 blocks on there, and you hang a different little ornament on it each day of Advent until Christmas arrives. And then when Christmas comes, it's a decoration. It's all filled in with little ornaments on it. Another one that's been great is a little sticker calendar where the kids can add a different sticker to a scene. And then when you're done, it's a little decorative scene. And the same thing with the Lego Advent calendars, which my kids just love. And you open a little door and you pull out a little bag and you build one little something and you add it to the scene. And then when Advent comes, when Christmas comes, you have a little Christmas scene. So anything like that, if you can, that just keeping that in mind has worked really well for us. As in, what is the point? Is it just something to do each day to remind you that it's Advent? Anything would work. But I like the ones that actually create something.
Yeah. You know, the one thing you mentioned there was the Lego Advent calendars. Nothing to me says Christmas like Yoda with a Santa Claus hat.
Yeah. They are definitely kind of secular. Not kind of. They are definitely secular. But the funny thing is my kids just like, they really like them so much, and they take them apart and they put them back in little baggies and they stuff them back in the window. And they keep the door closed at the end of Christmas, and then somebody else gets to use it this year. So that's how we've accumulated enough for all the kids over the years. It's a very time consuming process of reusing them. But
the one thing you mentioned The one thing you mentioned in there, and you mentioned a lot in a book about Advent, is that waiting, the anticipation, the not making it happen right away. Why is that important? Why, and especially with kids, you know, why is it important? And what can we do to enforce that? I mean, you gave some good suggestions out of the Advent calendar, but in general for the season itself.
Right. And as I noticed that as I sort of set these traditions throughout the year for our liturgical living, I try to work in life skills that I feel like that our society has forgotten about. And waiting is really one of those life skills that we want our kids to have. It's so easy to just have everything Prime 2-day shipping, right? If anything in the world takes longer than 2 days, I start losing my patience. and so it's good to have those times where we practice these skills. So we talk about Christmas and how great it's going to be, and it's not here yet. So we practice waiting, and I think that that's a great thing for kids to do, to be excited about something and wait on it. And to have it be, of course, they're going to be excited about presents, but can they be excited about giving presents as well as receiving presents? And can they be excited about, you know, a baby coming the same way that my kids are so excited about one of their siblings coming? And can we create that feeling with our kids of excitement for waiting for a baby? So we really try to focus during Advent on gifts that they're giving for other people. Things like we do a straw for baby Jesus. So we have a little wooden manger that my dad built for us. But when we started doing it, it was just a shoebox that we covered in brown paper. And we have cut up yellow and brown yarn to look like straw. And any time during Advent that the kids do a good deed or listen right away, or, you know, just something as easy as if I see them picking up a pair of socks on the floor and putting them in the dirty clothes, or if they put the kneeler down quietly at church on purpose, you know, you can see them doing it. Just little things like if they remember to brush their teeth without being asked, then they get to put in a piece of straw for baby Jesus, because we know that any good deed done out of love is done for God. And so our good deeds prepare Jesus a comfy bed for when he is born. And so it's a great thing it's a great way to remind kids to be good, because otherwise baby Jesus will not have a comfy bed to lay in when he comes, because he is coming.
Yes.
He's coming no matter what. And if we haven't prepared for him, then he won't have a comfy bed to lay in.
Exactly.
So that's something that, you know, that we think about every day and all day long, because it's very motivational for them. Kids like to be, even older kids like to be noticed for their good deeds, that they, you know, were supposed to build towards doing them in secret. But we all like to be acknowledged every once in a while.
For sure.
So that's a really great, that's been a really great thing in our family for keeping the focus throughout Advent on that preparation and on God.
Excellent. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
I have a quiz for you. What is one of the greatest gifts parents can give to their children? It's something children ask for often. When this gift is received, the entire family is incredibly joyful and transformed on the special occasion of the arrival of this masterpiece. This gift calls for faith, courage, and generosity on the part of the givers. It lasts for many decades, only getting better, changing, and developing each day. This magnificent gift is unique and can never be repeated, but a similar gift can be added approximately every year. This gift can only be given by three persons agreeing and acting. Have you guessed it yet? Yes, this profound gift is that of welcoming another child. And the three persons agreeing are husband, wife, and God. I'm Jim Littleton, forming faithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today we're spending it with Kendra Tierney, and we're talking about her book, The Catholic All-Year Compendium, Liturgical Living for Real Life. And real quick, one thing I need to mention is Ignatius Press has a new book club called the First National Book Club for Catholic Schools. Their mission is to address a need for a book club that supports the schools and teaches children, forms them in mind, body, and spirit. They've partnered with leading publishers to stock all book clubs with wholesome and educational materials that inspire and enrich all reading levels and interests. If you want to learn more, visit ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast. And back to your book, Kendra, you state in the book dealing with Advent, quote, an Advent wreath is really an archetype of liturgical living in the home, end quote. Can you explain that a bit? And what is the significance and history of Advent wreaths?
Yeah, so nobody knows this for sure, but it seems like there has been a tradition since pre-Christian times in Northern Europe of using wreaths with candles in them to during the winter as you know, just as a thing of beauty and hope in a cold winter time, and as Christians so often did, you know, if the new Christians saw something that was beautiful and useful, that we would sort of adapt it for our purposes. So it makes a lot of sense that a candlelit wreath would be used to prepare for Christmas coming. But again, it was a sort of Northern Europe tradition, so it wasn't something that was used in the Vatican. The German immigrants brought the wreath to America when they came here. So it's been a tradition in the U.S. for a long time. But Pope John Paul II was the first one who used a wreath at the Vatican, and it wasn't until the late 1960s. I think when prayers allowing for its use in churches became available. So before that time, it was used in a lot of Catholic houses, but couldn't be used in churches. So it really is a liturgical living in the home tradition well before it was in Catholic churches.
So another popular tradition that's definitely a home thing is the Jesse tree. For those unfamiliar with what the Jesse tree is, can you give us a little insight to that and maybe some of the favorite ones you've used through the years?
Well, so the Jesse tree is the idea behind it is that it traces the genealogy of Jesus. The history of the Jesse tree actually comes, I believe the first representations are in stained glass windows, and it makes, so there are two passages in two different gospels that trace the genealogy of Jesus, and in stained glass windows, there's one in Chartres Cathedral and in St. Denis, which are both really, really beautiful old cathedrals, and so they have these tall, skinny windows, and there's it's really an interesting look. So it's Jesse laying on the ground, and there's a tree growing out of his stomach, traditionally that branches off and shows the ancestors of Jesus. Mm. Now, it's been adapted, sort of that idea has been adapted for home use with Bible readings and sort of symbols from the Old Testament that build towards the birth of Jesus. It's actually more of a Protestant tradition. A lot of Catholics have adopted it. It's not something that we do in the home. We do a Christmas novena in the last 9 days before Christmas. That's based on prayers written in the 15th century, and that again use readings from the Bible and prayers to sort of trace that the Old Testament prophecies and lead up towards the incarnation, which is a really great thing to do, especially in a family, to have kids understand as we're in this season of waiting that that the Jewish people were waiting for thousands of years for Jesus to come. You know, we're waiting for this 24, or it varies year to year, but 22 days this year for Jesus to come. They waited a lot longer than that.
Right. And one thing I'd imagine that's in that Christmas novena that I think is very helpful to point out to kids is the typography, the what the Old Testament's saying about the coming of Jesus and how it's reflected in the New Testament and how that all ties together.
Yes, absolutely. It's great. The readings in the, and I'm not sure, there are different places to get readings for a Jesse tree. So it's not just one set thing. But the Advent novena that we do has an Old Testament reading and a New Testament reading, and you can see how they, how the New Testament reading is a fulfillment of the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I like to point out here as we go further into the book is the items that you discuss don't necessarily have to be elaborate. They don't have to be expensive store-bought items, because you talk a lot throughout the book about handmade crafts. Early in the book, you talk about, in particular, the Advent season is the decorations you make each year for your home. Can you tell us a little bit about the importance of that crafty type thing rather than just going out and buying something?
Yes, and I will preface it by saying that crafting with kids is not something that comes naturally to me. And I find it, you know, just so we're all on the same page, it's something that's hard, and it's for moms, it's a sacrifice to find the time and the patience to do crafting projects with kids. But I was moved to do it by a couple of old books that I really enjoy. One is the Maria von Trapp book called, Around the Year with the Von Trapp Family.
Yes.
I think it's called. And then there's another old one called The Year in Our Family by Mary Read Newland. There's a book called The 24 Days Before Christmas. And all of those books talk about the way that they would prepare their homes for Christmas. And it was always with homemade decorations, and that were in some cases really elaborate. Like the Von Trapp family talks about molding a nativity set out of clay every year. They would make a new one and get it, you know, and paint it and get it all set up and ready to go. And then they would toss it at the end of the season, and they'd make a new one. So we have not made our own nativity set yet, but I really like the idea of gathering evergreen branches and making our own Advent wreath. And we make our own garlands and cut out paper snowflakes and just little crafts that we can do. You know, when all my kids were homeschooled, it was easier to actually have one thing we do each day. But even if it's just, you know, one or two things a week that just add to that feeling of preparation. And so instead of, as we used to do before I really started instituting this liturgical living thing, is that the day after Thanksgiving, we would get our Christmas boxes down and we would decorate the whole house. And now I have found that it really helps for that feeling of preparation and waiting to decorate the house slowly and with these handmade things that we don't have to find a place to store every year, because we can make new paper snowflakes next year. And because we wait to get our Christmas tree until Christmas Eve, and so having some garlands up or having some wreaths that are actual evergreen helps our house kind of still smell like winter, because I live in Southern California, so it's never going to be very wintry out the window. So we can try to create that inside. But again, to have the Advent be preparing and waiting and building towards something rather than just a box to check of, all right, I decorated for Christmas.
Right, right. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back and we're talking about Christmas and some other seasons throughout the year. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
As master singer-storyteller John Michael Talbot's music became more popular over the years, he began to immerse himself in the teachings of the contemplatives, mystics, and monastic fathers and mothers of the Christian tradition. Talbot eventually began sharing what he's learned between songs during his concerts. Lessons from a Troubadour gathers these parables, stories, and reflections into book form for the first time. Talbot's words open an important window into the understanding of the Catholic faith in holy and ordinary language. Check out Lessons from a Troubadour at AveMariaPress.com or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We're spending today with Kendra Tierney, and we're talking about her book, The Catholic All-Year Compendium, Liturgical Living for Real Life. We've been covering Advent up to this point, but Kendra, another area you write at length about in the book are the feast days of saints during each season, whether that be Advent, Lent, or ordinary time. So why is it important to welcome the saints into our daily ebb and flow of our lives?
You know, I'll take Advent as an example again here, just for a second, that a lot of Catholics worry about Santa taking over the focus of Christmas, right? Where the concern is that kids only think about Santa and they don't think about Jesus.
Right.
And we have been able to include Santa in our Christmas, but not have him take over because my kids are used to celebrating Saints' Days. And during Advent, we celebrate not only St. Nicholas, but we also talk about St. Ambrose, and we talk about the Immaculate Conception, and Juan Diego, and Our Lady of Guadalupe, and St. Lucy, and St. John of the Cross. All of those saints are also a part of our lead up to Christmas. So while we do allow our kids to have a devotion to St. Nicholas, and St. Nicholas brings our presents that come under the tree, it's not the only saint that we enjoy during Advent, and obviously during the whole year. So there are a few saints that are celebrated every year in the week after Christmas that are considered sort of to be especially dear because of their proximity to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But Saint Stephen is the first martyr, and we celebrate him on the 26th. And Saint John, who was Jesus's BFF, on December 27th. And the Holy Innocents on the 28th. Are really a great way to include other saints sort of in our Christmas celebration.
Right, and I have to tell you, you're going to be rewarded as the first person on the podcast to refer to a saint as a BFF of Jesus.
That's right.
So, in the early part of the book, you suggest choosing a saint each year as your personal saint. How have you yourself found this beneficial?
I think it's really a fun way to meet new saints. And I think that the saints really do reach out to us sometimes when we especially need them. So my kids all have patron saints. They all have a saint that we included in their name to be their patron saint. But then each year we also pick at the beginning of the Catholic New Year, which is the first Sunday of Advent, we choose saints to be our extra saint of the year. And there are different ways to do that. If one of the kids just has a particular saint on their mind and they want to choose that one, that's fine. But the way we've had the most fun with it is just flipping through a big book of saints. We have an old Butler's Lives of the Saints, so you can just let it flip open and put your finger down and pick one. Or there's a saint name generator online, and it'll just give you a saint. and then we can we write them down so that we don't forget them. But we try to sort of look into their lives and ask for their intercession, and just use that as an opportunity to get to know some new saints. Mine this year was St. Joseph of Cupertino, who I knew that there was a levitating saint, but it was great to sort of get to know him this year. And I come from a family of aviators, and he is a patron saint of aviators for the levitating thing. It's just been a good way to find new things.
As we process through the book here, we get through Advent, we arrive at Christmas. What suggestions can you give us so that we can make the day more than just a frenzy of flying wrapping paper?
Yeah, that's a tough thing, right? Well, first, for us has been, well, a few things. I shouldn't say first, but of course, you know, having Mass be a focus of the day, and it is of course important. And for us, limiting the number of presents under the tree, especially with a big family, has been really important. And I don't want to take presents away from the celebration of Christmas entirely, because I think that whenever possible, I want to allow the cultural traditions of where I live to be a part of our Christmas. So where I live, people open Christmas presents on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And so that's fine. We'll do that. But when we had so many Christmas presents that we couldn't get to anything else during the day, that meant that it was the only thing we could focus on. And so we have asked family members to limit the number of Christmas gifts that they give to the kids to, you know, just one gift from the grandparents to each kid, or ideally one gift to them as a group of like something that they can play with outside, or you know, tickets to an event later on or something like that, and that we limit our gifts to each kid to one gift from Santa and one gift from the parents for each kid. And that way they still, everybody opens a few things, but it doesn't take the whole day, and we don't have to keep yelling at kids to stop playing with things so that they can open more things. Right. And then, so that has been a big shift in our family culture, because I grew up with a tons of presents Christmas. But this way to give more mindful and fewer number of gifts has been a big help for our family. And then, of course, going to Mass. And then we do a little family nativity play is our Christmas Day evening tradition. And it's the script that we use is available at online, and I just put it together from using the actual Bible text. I also have it in my Etsy shop as a download, but that people can just print it out as a script and hand them out. But we dress the kids up in turbans made of dad's t-shirts, and they hold a stick because you're a shepherd, paper wings that I made for angels. But to actually be saying the words of the Bible, saying the words of, of the shepherds, of the wise men. And it's been a really fun family tradition. It does not take very long to set up. The whole script takes 10 or 15 minutes to do. And you don't have to be able to read. I'll just whisper the lines to the littlest kids, and then they'll do it. So that has been a really great tradition for us for a long time.
One of the things that jumps out at me as a Catholic convert is that we get 12 days of Christmas while the secular world gets one and done. So how can we best celebrate the elongated 12 days of our Catholic faith's Christmas season?
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially because if you have kids, you're telling your kids, you know, no, we're not going to do that yet. We're waiting. And the trade then is, because we've been doing all the waiting, yeah, we have all these days of Christmas. And I think that it's really great to find a way in your family to really make that true and alive for your kids. And so I know some people who spread gift giving out for the whole 12 days. We haven't done that, but we don't watch our Christmas movies during Advent. And we don't watch Christmas versions of TV shows during Advent. We wait, and we watch a different Christmas movie every day for the 12 days. We wait on eating Christmas treats. We don't eat Christmas cookies and other traditional Christmas treats. We wait, and so we have a different Christmas treat and a different Christmas movie every day of the 12 days of Christmas. And that's something that never happens the whole rest of the year around my house, where we would watch 12 movies 12 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that the kids really look forward to. And then rather than doing a secular Elf on the Shelf kind of thing, we do Traveling Wise Men. And Catholic tradition is that the star rose on Christmas Eve at the birth of Jesus, and the wise men followed it. Thomas Aquinas talks about that they were able to travel quickly with divine assistance in order to get to Bethlehem by Epiphany. So in our house, the wise men from our nativity set start off, they come out on Christmas Eve and face away from the baby Jesus, and then they go all the way through the house and end up at the other side of the nativity looking at baby Jesus on Epiphany. So they move at night because they're following the star, and the kids get to look around and find them every morning.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the rest of the book. We're going to look a little bit at some of the other seasons of the year. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way: buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land gift shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today we've been talking about the book The Catholic All Year Compendium, Liturgical Living for Real Life. We've had with us the author Kendra Tierney. And Kendra, lest people think the book is only about Advent and Christmas, it's actually about the entire year. It is called Catholic All Year for a reason. You cover the major seasons of Lent and Easter, but one of the things I want to focus on now is ordinary time. How can we make ordinary time not be so ordinary?
Yes, that is an excellent question. What has worked well for us are just finding those few saints that we really have a devotion to and making family traditions. And I think that it's so important when we're trying to raise kids in a countercultural way. And even if you don't have kids, you're trying to live yourself in a countercultural way, then you want it to include good stuff, not just bad stuff. It shouldn't just be being Catholic shouldn't be a list of things that you don't do. It should also be a list of all sorts of great things that you do. And liturgical living, really, that's its whole history. The idea was that entire towns would celebrate their patron saints, all the saints that they had a special devotion to for a particular region or city, or what your parish is named. It would be a celebration of that we would observe in community. And even if at this point your community is just your immediate family, then you can find these saints that you have a devotion to and celebrate them in your home. And ideally, once you've established that, you start celebrating with friends, with neighbors. You find the patron saint of your parish, and your parish has a party for the patron of your parish, or, you know, you find saints that there was traditionally a devotion to in your city or your town, and observe those in community.
You also talk about personal celebrations of you know, importance to the reader. One in particular is observing one's baptism day. I thought that was pretty neat. So why is that significant, and how do we go about doing that?
Yeah, that's usually when people ask me, all right, I've never done any of this before, how do I get started? That's what I suggest to people, that they start with what we call the three special days. So again, whenever possible, we try to observe the norms of our culture. So that's celebrating people's birthdays. So we celebrate birthdays, but traditionally, to a Catholic, you would celebrate your name day, which is the name of your patron saint, or, you know, the saint with whom you share a name. So you would sell a person's special day would be their name saint's feast day. And you know, and while we're at it, your baptism day is actually much more important in an eternal sense than your birthday, because that's the day that, you know, that you're claimed for God and the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So rather than pick, you know, I'm looking at this, well, what do we cancel birthdays and only do name days, or do we cancel both of those and just celebrate baptism days? I said, no, you know what, we're going to do all of them, but we're going to do it in a way that's manageable for our family, which I'm really glad I set expectations before I had 9 kids. So for in our family, we do birthday, name day, and baptism day, and grown-ups and kids get to choose what we have for dinner that night. If I have planned ahead, they could, you know, pick anything that I can manage from the grocery store. Some days I don't have time. I have only realized it after I've gone to the grocery store for the week. So they just get to pick from what we have. But they get to pick what we have for dinner. We have a dessert. On baptism days, we find their baptism candle, or, you know, if you don't have the baptism candle, you can just choose any candle, and we renew our baptismal vows over dinner. And on their special day, you know, we talk about the saint. If it's their saint day, we talk about what baptism means. We talk about the child, you know, funny stories from their babyhood. And it just allows them to sort of be the focus, center of attention at dinner that day. And it also just really brings to the forefront this idea of a connection with their name saint, and an idea of the importance of their baptism. And for me, you know, I had asked my mom to dig up my baptismal certificate to find out what the day was. And sometimes people ask me, well, you know, there's no way I can figure out what my baptism day is. What should we do? And I say, you know, just close your eyes and put your finger on a calendar and just pick that as your day, and you can sort it out in eternity. Mm-hmm. But it's good to celebrate that, and what is the thing that makes stuff feel important to us? Well, it's meals, it's desserts, and so that's how we have made those days a part of our family culture.
As we wind down, I want to look at the appendixes in the back of the book. One of those, you talk about fasting. Why is this such an important practice, and what benefits have you realized from it?
Yeah, it's sort of fallen out of fashion, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We used to observe as a mandatory thing. I'm trying to remember. It's like, what's it least been? 40-something or 60-something days of required fasting during the year. And now we have 2, and just Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. And I think that we can do better than that. I think that that we can be trusted to be able to handle it and to be able to reap those benefits that come from detaching from some of the pleasures of this world. And I think that the actual discomfort of fasting is not really the point, where that can be a good thing, but the idea is to learn that you can handle this stuff, that you can challenge yourself and get used to a life that isn't constant comfiness, which is so easy now to just live a life of comfort and all bodily needs always attended to at all times. So to bring that into our family culture has, I hope, meant that we have kids who are better able to handle adversity, or, you know, even if you're just looking at it as a completely secular endeavor, this idea that you could go for a little while without snacks. You know, remember on Good Friday, you only ate one full meal the whole day. You can handle it. And this is something that is part of our culture and cultural inheritance. It's part of the tradition of our church, and it's sort of the focus has gone away from it. Mm-hmm. But it's actually still, there's only two required days of fasting, but a lot of people don't even realize that the Friday abstinence for meat is still a year-round thing. Mm-hmm. It's still required by canon law that we abstain from meat on every Friday of the year. Now, in the U.S. and in some other countries, we are allowed to make a substitute sacrifice, but the way it's actually played out is, once it wasn't required abstinence for meat, people just forgot about it, and they forgot about the alternate sacrifice. Mm. So in our family, we do abstain from meat on Friday throughout the year. And again, with the community and the culture, most of our friends at our kids' Catholic school, a lot of other families observe Friday abstinence for meat also, and it allows us to have something in common, that when we're giving something up, it helps to do it together. It helps to have other people who understand, and it just sort of helps Friday to be a real thing in our minds, where we remember all day long that this is Friday. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, you know, the liturgical living in the home for us has been a way to balance, right? So we remember Friday, and we also remember Sunday. So in our family, we abstain from meat on Fridays, and then on Sundays, we make sure to have Sunday feel really like a celebration. We try to sit at the dining room table and use the nice dishes. We try to have dessert every Sunday. We try to have a nicer meal. So it's about finding, it's about that balance of remembering the sacrifices that we are capable of making, even if the powers that be think we aren't, and to remember the joy of our Catholic faith too.
Well, Kendra, I want to thank you for spending time with us today. That's all we have for this episode. Where can people find your blog and the book, The Catholic All Year Compendium?
Yeah, so my blog is called Catholic All Year, so it's just www.catholicallyear.com. The book is available where books are sold. You can find it at Ignatius.com, and it's also in bookstores, local Catholic bookstores. It's in Barnes & Noble. You can get it anywhere. You can find my the booklets on Advent wreath prayers, the Nativity play, and also the Catholic Novena that I was talking about are available in my Etsy shop, which is called Printable Prayers.
Awesome. Kendra, again, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, I just really hope that this book, which has been a labor of love for me, you know, can really bring some of the joy in our faith into other people's homes too.
And I'm sure it will. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.